Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All my guitars are basically black.
Mine are for the most part too.
Yeah, I love the look of a black guitar. Even when I see one that I like, I'm like, man, that would look really nice if it was black.
Yep. Be a lot cooler if it was black. Same way with everything. Cars, bikes.
It kind of comes with the territory a little bit.
In your shirt.
Welcome, my friends, to Sun's Out, Mike's Out, a Cobras and Fire podcast brought to you by the Pantheon Podcast Network and the only show sticking it where the sun does shine.
I'm sitting here, and I know you as Freaky from Flip. That was how you came into my universe. I was a really big fan and followed Flip around quite a bit. Saw many shows that you performed on. I think I only caught two shows with Cherry, so it was really close to when you joined that I first saw Flip. But of course, I'm talking to Randy Ingebrigtsen. Did I get that right?
Perfect, man.
Right on, man.
Perfect.
That's got some Scandinavian background to it. Yeah.
Right on.
Now, you're from St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a little more don't you know up there than it is down here. We still got it, but... like born and raised or just kind of born in?
Born and raised, yep. I lived in every neighborhood you can imagine, in Sauk Rapids, Waite Park, Sartell.
Waite Park's got a brand new amphitheater.
Rice. I know, I saw that, and Sauk Rapids as well.
Oh, wow.
Russ Olson, a friend, mutual rock and roller friend. I think he has something to do with it. I'm not exactly sure. The venue in Sauk Rapids, Arena played there last weekend, and Stretch opened the venue. Hmm. With an acoustic set followed by Strange Days. Anyway, yeah, so I probably moved every 2 years my whole childhood until I was 18.
Yeah, so the only mutual friend I have from St. Cloud is also on a friend through Facebook. Do you happen to know Izzy Presley? He has
yeah.
his own podcast.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
All right. Do you know him well?
Yeah, very well. I just finished
meeting him in a few weeks here, but...
Yeah, totally, dude. He was just here last week when he was here for the beer run. He came over and sang and played guitar on Speeding Back to My Baby. We recorded it for him.
Oh, man.
So he had a little... something to promo his ACK band.
Now, is that something that's just for him? Like, could I get a sample and drop it in the show at some point?
Yes, for sure. He texted me last night and said that he wants to release it on the 20th because Eddie Trunk said he'll play it on his show that night.
Oh, boy.
Or that day. I got that text from him literally as I was falling asleep at like 6 this morning. We're kind of on the same time because he, you know, stays awake all night too. And even though we're 2 hours apart, we always seem to hit each other in the morning. But yeah, so I played drums with his ACK band in St. Cloud before the epidemic.
Okay.
And with my Matt Moline. Do you know Matt from my old band?
I know the name. Is he in ACK?
Yeah, he played, well, acts kind of whatever musician is available.
Okay.
So when he came to
Minnesota. It's
basically Minnesota.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, the first time he was here, Cherry, Greg Item from Flip, played bass with him. And this past time, I played drums. So Matt played bass, and then Mick, guitar player. Mick, his name is Mick, I think, but I'm not sure. Son of a bitch. Anyway, we rehearsed up here for the show, and then we did one show in just outside of St. Cloud somewhere, some little place. And while he was here, I'm like, dude, we should just record an Ace song. I fucking love Ace, and it would be easy. And we never got around to doing it. And then it coincided with Stretch and me and Happy all raving over the lick for Speeding Back to My Baby, right. That intro guitar lick. Because when I played it with Tommy, Izzy, the guitar player didn't have it. He didn't. There's a really weird fucking thing that you
have to play it right.
Yeah. And Stretch didn't know it. He's not an Ace Frehley fan. I mean, he appreciates them. I swear to God.
Yeah.
But he's not, you know, he doesn't have his solo album in his car. But I sent it to him, and I'm like, dude, figure this out. There's a swag to this. And he's like, ooh, yeah, that's sexy. And he nailed it. And after he kind of played it slow for me, then I was able to get it. It's kind of like a golf swing. You can swing it. You can play it. But can you nail it, you know? Can you make a chick want to get out there and dance to that guitar lick?
Yeah, we actually talked on that on our last episode that we recorded anyway. The guy, our normal show, the other co-host, he's never, you know, he dinks around in music a little bit, but he's never been in a band or anything like that. And he was asking me if I could offer any insight as to why, like, sometimes a clearly talented musician can't play Kiss. You know what I mean? I'm like, for me, it really does come down to caring. You know, a lot of them really just don't. From my experience, the people that, like, if they really don't, if they have no respect for Kiss,
100%.
You're just not going
to. Well, there's two ways to look at that. What you're saying is that they don't care. And there's also when they do care, but they just can't do it.
And it's, that's more me.
It's AC/DC. Who did you say?
Kiss.
It's Kiss, AC/DC, the Ramones.
Aerosmith to a certain extent.
Aerosmith, totally. You know, those kind of bands that people think are bad bands because they're one-dimensional. It's like, that's fine. Maybe they're one-dimensional, but that's what makes them. That's what makes the swing. Like, if you can see Steven Adler's Guns N' Roses,
yeah,
it's fucking amazing because it's him playing drums. Yeah. And it's him that, you know, anybody can sound like Axl. And I think for the most part, there's a million Slash guys out there. And Steven Adler's current Guns N' Roses band, the guy really goes out of his way to do the Axl moves and to look right like on. Him and everything. So it's a total tribute band, 100%. But Steven playing guitar or drums, if you're in the back of the arena not giving a shit, just hanging out with people, you hear all those songs, you will be dancing and swaying because that's the guy who played the drums to those songs. Same with the Ramones. AC/DC, fucking huge AC/DC. If you can't play like those guys, you just sound like a computer chip, you know, covering a song.
I saw a meme today that it was like it's supposed to be like a joke about on a guitar store. These are the songs you can't play, and it had like all the like Sweet Home Alabama,
Stairway to Heaven,
that kind of stuff. And it had any AC/DC song, unless you know more than just a little part to play, know how to properly play just a little part.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like, that resonated with me. It's like, you know, first of all, learning AC/DC, I know what that's like. It's like, oh, it's so easy, and then like, no, I'm sorry. I think Kiss is easier than AC/DC.
When it's all mashed together in a band, it's like, yeah, that sounds easy. But when you just take the, you know, it's really cool that you can hear all the isolated tracks on the internet now because of those Guitar Hero and Rock Band games. That's why all those isolated tracks are out there now.
I didn't know that. And, that's cool.
Oh my God, it's so, I can listen to John Bonham isolated drum tracks all day, like, you know, put it on shuffle. It's so musical and just so amazing. And Eddie's soloed guitar tracks. Like, just give me the rhythm tracks. I'll listen to them all day long.
Yeah. I recently gained appreciation for Bonham that I didn't have prior. I was never really a big Zeppelin guy, but a lot of those recordings sounded kind of like, I don't know. It's a lot of noise on the drums. I don't get that. I think, yeah, he hits hard and thunderous. Like, that I like. But no, that dude, I was underwhelmed. I wasn't giving him enough credit is what I'm trying to get at, man.
Well, maybe it just didn't play to you until
right,
a
that
certain
was part
point.
Of it is that, like, you know, it wasn't really my band to begin with.
Man,
but
I love when that shit happens to
yeah.
me. Being
it's cool
at
that it
this
still
age,
happens.
Yes, where you're like, I never got this band. And, like, that happened to me about 3 years ago with Matthew Sweet. You hip to him?
Yeah.
Dude, I knew Girlfriend, and my old band used to do Sick of Myself. We covered Sick of Myself, which
of
I love. But for
like
some reason,
song.
I never went into his catalog for some weird reason. Then when I moved here, for some reason, I just started listening, and he turned into, like, I don't think I listened to anything else for 2.5 years. Just every wow. single, I bet 80% of his song. Yeah, it was so great. I was texting all my friends, just like, dude, you gotta listen to this guy. They're like, yeah, we know, he's great. I've seen him 4 times. I'm like, yeah. So it's still cool when that shit can happen. A lot of times too, it's people pointing stuff out to mm-hmm. you. Someone goes, "Hey, did you?"
Especially this far into your life, it's like you've kind of just accepted this for what it is, now someone's got to shine a light on a part you missed.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm still that way with Pink Floyd. Like I'm still due to have a Pink Floyd freak out.
Okay,
because I love them. Don't get me wrong. And Faith and I just did a cover of "Hey You."
Nice.
And I love the movie, but I've just never done the deep dive, the freak out, you know?
Yeah, I guess I haven't really either. I recently bought The Wall on vinyl. First time I listened to it since I was probably 15 or 16, and I did the same thing. I turned the lights off, put the headphones on, and
ate. Do it proper.
From the beginning to the end, man. Yeah, but, yeah. Well, we're getting pretty far into the show. Let's get your proper resume out.
Hold
here,
on.
Randy.
I want to go on this before we
okay.
forget. I had Faith, my girlfriend, experience 2112 like a year ago. Guys, if you ever have a chance to do that. Well, she's weird because she's a music freak anyway.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that big of a battle. But if you have a normal girlfriend that scoffs at Rush, like, what a great thing. Get the lyrics, put them on the TV or on your laptop, put the headphones on her if you have a great stereo and play 2112. It's in, you know, the side one, and tell her don't follow ahead in the lyrics. You know, if you can put it on your laptop so you have to scroll so they can't look ahead on the lyrics and they sit and listen. I guarantee there isn't a chick that can walk away from that without going fucking cool.
Well, I'll give it a shot. My wife's not a big Rush hater, but she definitely doesn't go into it too much.
Yeah.
She'll be a test for me. But yeah, I'm talking with Randy. Like I said, you were Freaky, Useless, and Flip. And if my memory serves right, you had your own band right after Flip called Useless. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And then, of course, just recently, Hairball. Was there anything in between that I missed? Or
yeah, the Dead Cowboys.
Okay.
I played drums in the Dead Cowboys with Happy on guitar and Bob Jensen on lead vocals and guitar and Al Johnson, Alice, who was my bass player in Useless, was the bass player in the Dead Cowboys. And we were a Southern rock meets heavy rock cover band. I don't want to open that can of worms. Super fun band. So we, you know, Hairball hadn't exploded at that point yet, so this was a side project for us, but it was super, super fun.
Happy, has he been in Hairball the whole time? I know they've had
no.
a hand. Okay.
No, him and Bob joined kind of about the same time. I think like 4 or 5 years in, six years in or something like
but
that.
It's been a long run then still. Like.
Oh, God, yeah, ago. Yeah. But those were the extent of the bands, I believe. I played bass in Planet Melvin, too. I don't know if you know Melvin James.
No.
The Crash Street
Kids. I
heard
that name, though. That's local,
then? Yeah. Okay. He's the original Bryn.
Oh. Elaborate.
Bryn has borrowed a lot from Melvin.
Is he as old as Bryn, or?
I think he might be a year or two older, a little bit older.
Okay.
I'm not sure. When you get to that point, it's all the same.
Or
right?
him and Bryn friends
but
or
I think,
something, they grow up, or?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I know he's known of him, and you know, they were buds and still are buds. But it was just, you know, because I'd looked up to Bryn as a songwriter since the Obsession days when I was a kid, seeing him at the ballrooms. I love the songwriting, and when I started playing with Melvin, hearing all these songs, I'm like, whoa, look at that, ooh, oh, okay, I see where that came from. But, you know, everybody, I mean, it's only been done originally one time ever, so everything comes from somewhere, who gives a shit?
I love the Beatles, but they had a pretty clean slate when they were starting, you know
right?
what I mean? So.
But even, you know, Lennon and McCartney will say, they'll be like, oh God, if it wasn't for Chuck Berry or if it wasn't for their guys, then you know, who's the ultimate guy that sits at high up top of the mountain that played a pissed off guitar, the very first one? You know?
Satan.
Satan.
You started all this stuff according to my church.
Totally, man.
Taking a little bit back to Flip now. Well, I have a couple questions for you. I have a memory of I think it was you and Kai in studio at 93X. And I believe you're doing some kind of name that tune thing. Do you recall if that would have happened?
It for sure would have happened. We did so many shows, morning shows.
Yeah, you're on
guys.
A lot. But this one stuck out to me because out of the blue, you whipped out a Vandenberg tune, Burning Heart, right? I was like, what? I mean, no one's going to guess it.
Dude, we do it in our live set, our acoustic set. Faith and I do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not a track you hear a lot of people whip out. You know what I mean? It's like
that's kind of our thing. We're doing those songs that you go, oh, fuck, I haven't heard that since I was two.
Right on.
Yeah. But they're still kick ass. And that's one of them. And, you know, some of those riffs you hear, like, let's see what it is. Cult, remember that Cult song?
Chow Baby?
Yeah, Chow Baby. That's the kind of stuff we're pulling out for our little acoustic set. So,
well, anyway, that was a cool. I really, there's no question there. It was like, sweet.
So, did they play it and I named it or something?
Oh, no, or? Vice versa. Like, you were actually playing songs and they'd have to.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
And, and then, yeah, you threw that in there and I was just like, and I'm like, I'm like listening. I'm like, I might be the only person listening right now that knows this. You know, it's like, you know, and that's not a brag. I'm like, that's just not a song that's out there.
Totally,
you know?
Man. Isn't it amazing how like those first two Vandenberg records, like everybody I knew had them. They were just they stood right next to Back in Black to me and like in my clique. But then
I like the opening track and the one after that record, All the Way.
Your Love Is in Vain. Heading to
I may
storm
have I have my chronological name. Vandenberg off there. So.
I should never believe what they said. Now it's too late to go back. Turn out like I planned. Seems I gotta go on till the end. Now, two cops are killed by my gun.
Yeah, they were kind of Van Halen-y.
Yeah, a little bit.
But I dug it. It's man, there's a fine line in the 80s how old you were. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Like you could be literally like a year off somebody and have a totally different, like me and Bren were kind of on that cusp of.
You're significantly younger than him, though.
Yeah. I don't know how much, but enough to where it was, you know, I think the crossover was like Alice Cooper, probably. Like there were songs of Alice Cooper, like, How Are You Gonna See Me Now? That hit me at a super pivotal point. And he laughs when he hears that song. Like
yeah.
It's such a fucking top 10 piece of shit.
Oh, really?
And he's deep into the real Alice.
I'm more with you on this one.
So I'm, you know, but then I crossed the line at Frankenstein and Poison. That's where I'm like out. That's where I think he's.
I like
candy
the Frankenstein. There's the Feed My Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Okay. Because there's also Teenage Frankenstein. But I'm with you on Poison, man. I was just like this, even for this genre of music, this is kind of shitty.
Yeah. And ZZ Top went there too with some of their stuff, and Turbo Lover Priest did. It's like they all did what they had to do, but I just thought it's a really weird place where you're like, and Izzy, you know, his first Kiss show was one of the non-makeup shows, and that changed his life.
Yeah,
and to me, that's like, oh my God, dude, I used to laugh at Kiss fans at that point. You know, we were so overdone with them, and they were such a Bon Jovi piece of shit band. He's like, fuck you, man. It's like, I know, I'm just busting your balls. But it's weird, right?
Well, I came in at 77, but I was 7 years old. And my family was dirt poor, and they sure weren't into taking kids to Kiss concerts. So I didn't get to see a concert that I wanted to go to until I had my own car and money to buy my own ticket. And that happened to be the Crazy Nights tour for Kiss. So.
And it blew your shit?
No, it was good, and I really enjoyed it. But like, I have to admit, like, there was this part of me that like expected something different. I really didn't get that Kiss experience until the first reunion show that I saw.
Okay.
And then when I saw them come out, and it was just
it wasn't.
Bam.
You're saying it was your first Kiss concert or your first concert ever?
Oh no, I had been to couple, not many.
That makes a huge difference. What was your very first one?
It was either Pink Floyd or it was either Pink Floyd at the Dome or Motley Crue Girls. The timeline is just, it's right in there. So
was the Motley thing that must have been pretty cool.
That was pretty sweet. That one blew my mind just because, you know, that was the old Met Center and that concert experience doesn't really exist anymore, you know, with the parking lot. And I'm like, fuck, seeing people just getting hammered and doing everything.
That was my first show, Kiss, 78. Always on the, if it's 78 or 77, I know it's 78.
You know it too?
I know it. It's the one Detective opened for them. It was the Live 2 Love Gun tour or whatever.
All right.
But I remember it, like, I didn't get to do any. I was in fifth grade. I didn't get to do any of the parking lot stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just too young to know what it was about or appreciate it. But my older cousins that went with me, my mom bought me the tickets. My aunt and then a different couple of cousins, Kelly and Kevin, shout out to you if you're listening. Went with, so I was kind of just a little fifth grade kid, you know. I just did Kiss and the talent show and got yelled at by the principal and embarrassed and humiliated in front of the school by the principal. And and our seats, dude, I am not kidding, it was either second or third last, very last row, top tier, back of the arena. Like, there were two seats behind me or one row behind me. I can't remember.
Very much my girls' seats were like that. Straight back.
Were there screens for Motley at that point?
No, they had this giant inflatable motorcycle that ended up falling over on the stage. But we could actually see the top of the light rig. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's still.
I know, me too. It didn't affect me. It was like I was so blown away by the fact that I was in the same building with Kiss.
Yeah.
Like, it just kept blowing my mind that they're right there. They're two football fields away. One, I guess, Met Center. But they're in the same fucking building. And we happened to drive by the front of the hotel that they were leaving, going from hotel to venue. We drove by, we were in the middle of the traffic jam in front of the hotel. So there was a bunch of bodyguards with Kiss logo shirts on from the hotel to the limos and red carpets, and Paul, Gene, Ace, and Peter with their hands over their face.
Wow.
We were stuck right in front of that, so I saw it. And like, my cousin was screaming like it was the Beatles. Like, I think that's where I got my tinnitus, where it started. Was her. She wouldn't stop screaming as loud as she possibly could,
because
Kiss was like 20 feet in front of us without makeup on. And I just, with all the people and stuff, and the way I could barely see, I saw Gene and, who did Gene ride with? Peter. The other two were already in the car, but I caught a glimpse of that. And I was like... It was hard to concentrate at the concert because I was so freaked out by it. I just was fucking 20 feet away from Kiss without makeup. And when you were that age, you just thought they were superheroes. They weren't dudes, man.
Very much so. Yeah. And are you really a fan if you didn't have some embarrassing grade school story related to Kiss, right?
No.
Yeah, that's why that should be the rule. Right.
Getting
there.
Punched. Got punched so many. But it was great when I did my thing in Pleasant View Grade School. Pleasant View, you're still out there. That's where we did our little talent show and dressed up like Kiss. Some of our moms helped us do it. It was really cool. But I got the three best-looking, most popular jock kids in the fifth grade to do it.
Oh, wow.
Like, I turned them around from beating the shit out of me to,
that's
like...
That's a bit of an achievement in itself.
I think I worked it in by bringing Rock and Roll Over and playing... I didn't want to go with Beth because I didn't want to... You know, I wanted to work because we had a class where you could bring a record and each kid got to play a song. God, why don't they do that anymore? That was the coolest fucking thing in the world, where we had in fifth grade an actual whole.
I remember that. You bring your record in.
And so I didn't want to play Beth because it was too easy. You know, and then even the cool kids, the jocks, wouldn't like such a candy ass song. So I picked Hard Luck Woman. And everyone loved it.
Oh.
So 2 weeks later, I had them all talked into being in a Kiss tribute band to do one song for the talent show.
Well, it is fun to dress up like Kiss.
Oh, God. Every year. Tinfoil. More tinfoil.
As I've gotten older, especially now that it's pretty easy to get a perfect costume,
yeah.
My appreciation leans more towards the make it as dirty and cheap as you can.
Totally,
have fun,
man.
With it.
Have fun with it, yeah. The greatest ones I ever saw were at a Halloween party at First Ave one year. Four guys were the Kiss dolls in the packages. Dude, it was breathtaking. They literally were giant full-sized boxes
box
with the plastic in front and everything. Yeah,
that's in
the super bad wigs, and they just walked around. They were able to walk around in them. God, somebody has to have photos of that online. You would think I belong to like 25 Kiss forums.
Well, it's an amazing fucking costume idea.
Yeah,
yeah, really.
They had to have people help him walk up on stage.
Well, Flip had a lot of Kiss elements to its show, man.
Bill O'Coin.
Yeah. Well, I definitely have to ask you about him, but like, what was everybody in the band a fan?
Kilo was the least fan of Kiss, but he still was.
Because he's a cheesehead.
Well, Sabbath was his band, okay. So you kind of fucked yourself. He's wearing a Sabbath shirt right here, right now. But yes.
I can't help to take a cheap shot at somebody.
There
from
you go, man.
Bangers,
you and Tommy are good, or Izzy are brothers in arms that way. To just say my piece on the whole Packer thing. Remember when we had Favre for those two seasons?
I just listened to a podcast today where Sage Rosenfels, who was the backup quarterback then, kind of gave some behind the scenes fun stories of that whole year.
Oh, dude, you got
to
share.
Oh, I'll send it to you, man. Yeah, it was fascinating. Anyway, carry on.
I thought those were two of the most exciting Viking seasons there ever.
The first
ever
one
were.
Was amazing. You remember it kind of started slow, like maybe Favre kind of lost it?
Yes.
And then that San Fran game, it's just like...
went fucking apeshit. It was so fun. But I prayed to Lemmy on a Sunday basis, please don't let us win the Super Bowl with him. If we win the Super Bowl with Brett Favre, we'll never... we could win every Super Bowl till the end of time. But you had to get over that four losing hump with our quarterback.
I would have been over it. I would have said exactly what you said, but I think about four games and I'm like, I think I'm okay with it. But
No, I couldn't have. Nope, I don't want a Super Bowl that. I want anybody else. You just, I loved that we had him because he's a phenomenal fucking athlete.
Oh, yeah,
period.
He had such a killer year, too.
And he looked like he was having so much fucking fun, just chucking the ball like a freak show. I loved all of it. I loved it. But I'm like, please don't let us win. Don't let us win. Okay, sorry. That's
well, if you want to needle Packer fans, anytime if they ever mention Favre, you just follow up with all-time Viking great.
Yeah.
And that always
he waited to give his best to us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that cheap shot that took him out, the Saints, I was like, that's it. That's
fucking
what's
cheers.
Keeping us out of the fucking Super Bowl. Yes, we got this. And now it's going to end in a huge controversy where the Saints, like, supposedly had a contract on him.
Yeah.
Like, who's.
I think they proved it.
Someone's going to get a new house in Naples if they take out Favre.
It's a difficult ending to a really fun season,
God.
Man.
I know. But it was exactly what it's for, entertainment purposes only.
Yeah. When I was younger, I would take losses a lot harder. Now, it's just during the game, I'm a little bit of a dipshit. But afterwards, I'm like, it's just, who cares? These guys are going to go eat and have something. Why should I be all worked up? They're going to go have a nice dinner after this. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, except for the, was it the 95 or 97 season?
Oh, 98.
98.
Yeah.
Where Anderson missed
yeah.
I was at that game with Kai.
So was
We were.
Hey, Kai, that was the first game we went to together. Not together.
Were you in radio or did you work at 94?
No, I just had season tickets.
Okay.
I was just a doofus.
Kai had a connection at 93X, a few of them. Some of the guys were just really good friends. We were sitting in Evander Holyfield seats because he decided to just stay down on the field with the Falcons because he was friends with them and shit. So his seats were just there in case he needed to sit, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So we got him and they were like fifth row up up dead center.
Did you show up with your mohawk?
Mohawk, full up purple, Viking horns painted on the side white with the yellow a little bit. Totally perfect. Right. Kai did it and just fucking did it perfect. And I had some big, weird, professionally made fake teeth that are all gnarly. So I wore those and really fucked with a lot of people's heads because it just... So anyway. But I made Fox News on that that thing. Some friends called from out of state. We're like, dude, saw you on Fox News fucking throwing the horns with your horns and your mohawk. And Channel 5 News, I hijacked one of their interviewers after the thing. And I got up right in the camera. I said, you know what? You don't get to win a game when you drop passes in the end zone. You just go home and wash off the horns, but you keep the mohawk for next year. And I dropped the mic and walked away, and they used it. It was right great. Push the guy out of the way.
Yeah, so now we just got done breaking any Viking fans' hearts listening to this, but we brought up the two most recent shitty memories. But.
God, that was the worst. I was so bummed out. And the guys from Dimebag and Vinny were sitting, because Sabbath and Pantera were playing that night in town.
Really?
That night that we lost that game. And they were just sitting some few rows, like two or three sections down. I remember looking at them all the time, because they were Atlanta fans.
I'm sorry, I have to correct you. Diamond Vinny, hardcore Cowboy
fans, but between the Vikings and
okay,
yeah.
Right. Gotcha. Fair enough.
I didn't go to the show. I was so depressed. And dude, I swear to God, I got out to my car, started up, and blew the muffler off my car. So I had to sit in Vikings traffic, waiting to get out of next to the Metrodome.
I honestly, I must have blacked out that whole. I have no idea what I did after the game.
Drunk?
Oh yeah, yeah. I was definitely not. I wasn't blackout drunk.
But the depression on top.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah, my mind has said you don't need.
Yeah.
You don't need this.
Go home. Go to bed.
Yeah. That was now. That is the time though where like a loss, like especially a loss like that, I guarantee that my mood for at least a week was affected by it.
It was horrible.
It's just not worth it.
It was so dreadful. Wasn't that the season that Moss did he was tackled and he did the toss?
No, that was with a Culpepper year. That was like two or three years later. Okay. With Tamo Williams. That play was great.
Yeah, those Culpepper years and the Moss years and the three receivers. God, those were so fun.
Yeah, 98 was his rookie year. So he kind of
Moss?
Was, yeah. So he blew up and kind of changed things for us a little bit. Changed the environment in that stadium, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. I never really thought of that till now. Totally did.
It's all him.
Turned it into a rock show.
Yeah, made it hard to get tickets. I mean, made us, if we could make a game, we got a little easier to get rid of them. But Well, hey, the last time I talked football, a guy named Craig Smith, who you've never heard of course, because he's just some nobody.
You motherfucker.
He complained that we talk too much sports. So we'll get back to Flip here a little bit. I do have a question because, back then.
It was just enough.
We were just kind of at the cusp of the internet when I first started. When I first moved to the Twin Cities, started taking in Flip shows and trying to get my own band and stuff going. So a lot of stuff was rumor, you know what I mean? So clear a few things up for me. Did you roadie for Flip before joining the band? Is that how you got the gig? That's true?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. You want to elaborate a little more?
Started out as... I basically started out by doing a website for him. I started Flip
you
Central.
Really?
I'm Uncle Flip.
Okay. I had no idea.
Yeah. I think I divulged that in Izzy's interview a couple years ago, but if not, then you got the exclusive on that. But yeah, I was going to school for multimedia. I went from 95 to 97, and that's basically when the internet kind of took off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was building websites on Netscape Navigator because you could drop and drag stuff and do it. You didn't need to code. So I was doing things. And then I would steal code. Like I would see people's code. Like when rollovers, dude, this is so funny. I'm telling this story. Like there was a time when the internet was completely static and nothing but text. And then when images came on, they took forever to download and they were very rare. And at some point you could like drag and drop photos in and build a web page on Netscape Navigator. So I created a Flip logo and called it Flip Central and got some pictures and did some graphics. And then there was this thing called a rollover, where if you rolled your mouse over an image, it would turn into another image. So you could do like a light switch in the off position. When you roll your mouse over, it turns into the on switch. So I was doing, you know, toggle switches on guitars.
It was a pretty decent website for its time.
It was. I was stealing code for all these games, like
hey, can you play Flip Hangman?
I would just look at the code and go, okay, I'm seeing a pattern in this code, and then I would change it according to what I wanted it to do. Now you can still do that now, but that was the wild, wild west days, and it was so fucking fun to do. But yeah, there's Hangman, and there was checkers, and there was checkers, not chess, but checkers, and each thing had a flip head on it.
Yeah.
There was like four or five different games, and I did. Yeah, man, I did it every day. I worked on it every day, pretty much.
Yeah.
And so that got me in. I did a 3D page where I took two cameras and put them next to each other, and then you take photographs that way, and then you bring the film from one camera into Photoshop. Well, you bring them both into Photoshop, and you separate the channels, the left one and the right one, and then you do some kind of thing where you fill it with red and blue, and then you get those red and blue glasses, and you look at your computer, and it's totally 3D. So I'd flip
it
in
worked.
3D. Yeah, totally
even
worked.
Even with a cathode ray tube?
Yeah, man, it looks awesome. You can feel like you can jump into the TV. Oh. And so I had Bryn with his coyote pointing at the camera and all the customs around him, and it looked like you were, you know, the coily cord coming at the camera and shit. Yeah, I would just find tutorials and people's sites, and I'd look at the code and just like adapt it and do it to flip. So then, and I was at all the photo shoots and doing a lot of them, and Kai was doing almost all the graphic design for everything else. And like we totally had a KISS DIY Home Depot rock and roll thing going, you know?
Absolutely. No, some of that, I mean, I love the music, but yeah, the shows are always so much fun. Like one of the outdoor shows you guys saw, Urban Sprawl, does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like in a parking lot on a Sunday.
Yeah.
The cops came and shut everything down.
A lot of those.
There's another
the
one.
Lava Lounge, we did one in the parking lot of the Lava Lounge.
Okay. There was a street dance kind of in the 400
Cedar Fest?
Area. Cedar Fest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Cedar Fest with the porn section, the horn section, but called them porn section. We got one of those orange scissor lifts from Home Depot.
Yeah.
And guys with horns, and we did a little bit of the Chicago. Well, we had a song. What was it that had horns in it? Hey! I can't remember what the fucking name of it was. But there was horns in it. And we had these guys dress up in orange suits. Yeah. Oh, man. I love weed. Anyway, yeah, that was one of my very early on gigs, too. I actually saw Flip do Cedar Fest, I think, once or twice before I even joined the band. I have pictures of them just being a fan out in the crowd.
Wow.
But yeah, I was a huge fan of Bryn since the Obsession days. They were like my favorite band of all time when I was a kid. Like there was Dare Force and Chameleon and Paradox and all these bands, and I loved all of them. But Obsession was the one that was kind of like KISS, you know. There's kind of each guy had their thing, and I did really fucking dig their tunes. And so, what was I getting at? What was the point?
I have no idea. Well, it's kind of my fault. I really just set up.
You
hey,
said something about us
this.
Being the kind of being.
Oh
like
yeah,
KISS,
well,
but
yeah, but the whole kind of KISS vibe.
Yeah,
a little more colorful though. Not so much black and silver.
Yes.
A lot of. Well, how about that? Where do you get those that bodysuit rubber thing? You were like, I don't know stores that sell that. Like,
I found this literally little tiny old grandma lady in Sauk Rapids.
Yeah.
It was just on whatever main street that is that goes through Sauk Rapids. Along the river, you know, whatever. And there was a home altercation sign there that I just kept seeing every time I drive. And I never occurred to me that, you know, I should stop in there and see if this place can make clothes for me because they're so close. And the lady that owned it was tiny. She looked like my little tiny grandma. And I towered over her, and she was so sweet and cute. She's like, "What can I do for you?" And I'm like, I need a pair of leather pants. Do you think you can make leather pants? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. And she was so sweet that she just kept asking me questions about it. And fast forward, she made me a pair of leather pants that, I don't know if you know this or not, but they can't find a piece of cow material long enough to make leather pants, one strip. That's why you always see leather pants with some sort of seam at the knee. Always. Because they you can't find a strip of leather.
No, I own a pair and it has that seam you're talking about.
It just depends on how you want the seam to look, whatever, but you always have to have a seam there. She's the first one to teach me that. So I said, well, let's do a cool V, you know? And then do the conches, the whatever, the buttons, the big silver buttons down the side, bell bottoms, you know, and then the top or the football lace. So no matter if I gained a few pounds or lost a few pounds, I could just tie them tighter, you know. And then
I should have done that. Yeah, I could probably still put mine on once in a while.
Yeah, but I forgot about my thighs. That didn't help in that area. That's why Gene Simmons had those Chrissy Cressy things. But then when it came to the flip days, yeah, I was like, hey, what about a bodysuit out of this rubber? I found this rubberized material. It wasn't it was kind of, I guess it was spandex based, but then it was coated in rubber that would stretch. And I found some pattern at the Hancock. And it was just a bodysuit pattern, but she measured me and altered it to fit the pattern and made me these fucking suits, dude. They're like double stitched and like I was shopping for these things when we were in New York and LA and all these places. And the prices on things, you know, I would have bought anything just to have it because I needed to have it, no matter how expensive. But you just couldn't find anything cool. And if it was cool, it was cheap as fuck, just garbage. I told her, you know how much money we could make with you making these clothes, the quality you do? And she'd get done making it, like zippers here, stretchy elastic here that you can't see so it fits tighter in certain places. You know, just amazing craftsmanship from this little old lady. And I go, we could make $2,000 per outfit, I swear. Because she'd get done and go, well, let's see. You owe me about $77. Is that okay?
Oh, boy.
Granny, here's $200. And let's see how many more we can pump out. Start sending them to Soho in New York, man. Get you retiring early. And she literally made clothes every band I had been in since that for like 10 years. I was at her place all the time. And then one day, she retired. I went in after not being there for 6 months and I went back in and the lady said, she retired. She goes, do you want her address? She'd love to see you if you want to go out and visit her. So I said, no, just tell her that if she ever thinks, because she still owned the shop, she just never came in. And she came out of retirement and built me two more flip outfits.
That's very cool.
Sorry, I had to share. If anyone in Sauk Rapids knows that place, Altercations, right along the river, whatever that is, going, and it says they have a handicap ramp on the side. Okay, next question.
Another rumor I heard, and there was a message board to the Flip Central thing, of course. Those were really popular back
then. Guest book.
Yeah, yeah. It was afterwards, like the site went quiet for a while, but that message board kind of stayed active with fans and whatnot, and I would check it once in a while. And again, I asked Bryn the same question, but I'm also going off of memory. So this isn't, it's been a lot of years, a lot of activities.
Totally, man.
All right, so I don't mind getting slapped back. But anyway, and it also, this is 100% a rumor, so it's like not even a verified thing. It was that there was a falling out with you and Bryn, some kind of blow up, and that's kind of what ended Flip.
That happened after Flip had been done.
Okay, so there was, are you guys not copacetic or?
Yeah, we're totally copacetic. Yep.
All right. I'm just going to read the room and move on here.
there was some shit that happened after the band broke up, but the band just broke up because we were just tired. We were just done.
Yeah.
You know, because everything we had done, the four of us had done. I mean,
you were in it with when they played Woodstock?
Yes.
Yeah, right on.
Yes. And that was, you know, we played our set and then we were asked to stay the rest of the weekend in case any bands didn't make it. They were going to put us in.
That never came up.
But fuck, dude, it was real. I mean, I was in full freaky attire and mohawk for, was it 3 or 4 days? Yeah, full on. Like, I remember shaving out in the sun in the mirror of the van, shaving my head and sun burned, fucking flaking off and shit. Just got to be ready. Fucking Red Hot Chili Peppers might not make it.
Yeah, that'd be great if that was
everybody
the
had to hang around within a certain area because there was two stages, one at each end of the. It was a fucking military base, so it was a long fucking jaunt from stage to stage. You couldn't hear one band while the other. You know what I mean? They were so far away you couldn't hear each other. So everybody was like, stay within, you know, if it's going to take you 20-minute walk to get back, check in every hour kind of thing. The whole, no cell phones, or if you did, they were, you know, didn't barely work.
So,
on the military.
Especially
base.
Out in the middle of nowhere, they're not going to get shit for reception. But,
right.
Well, you guys also did Edge Fest and X Fest almost every year. I'm pretty sure you were at the one that had Def Leppard and Buck Cherry. Do you happen to remember that lineup?
I remember Buck Cherry playing there, but I don't remember Def Leppard.
Buck Cherry canceled at the last minute, and then it went Buck Cherry and then Def Leppard. And like by that time, everybody's been drinking all day. And I think they're trying to keep the crowd. In hindsight, I think they just tried to keep the crowd. He's like, hey, Def Leppard's agreed to come out and play a little early and play a longer set. And Def Leppard waited about as long as it would take for Buck Cherry to do an hour set, do a quick changeover, and then Def Leppard came out. And
they didn't go early?
But every 10 minutes, they had a guy coming out.
They're just about ready.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of shit, man.
Oh, my God. Were people getting pissed?
I don't recall BB being getting ugly or anything like that, but I thought it was kind of comical. I'm like,
Dude, I remember a lot of I could do a documentary on just my memories from the Edge Fest that we played. And Cherry did the first one. He was still in the band when the first one that happened that really broke him, that MTV thing where MTV did the local band Flip out of Minneapolis.
And that was is that the cereal one?
They were throwing mud.
Oh, okay.
And Bren was like egging the crowd on and mooning the crowd, and they were throwing mud and rocks and shit. But every time we played, it was some huge event, you know, come jumping out of the 12-foot cereal box and beating the shit out of the boy band that was in
that
place
was good.
Of us. And it turns out one of the guys in that was, I'm going to forget who that is too and be such a schlock. But some guy in a local band.
Frankie's been enjoying some of the devil's lettuce today. So
yeah.
Hopefully, people will forgive you.
There's people that, thanks to the internet and thanks to Facebook, there's so many people that I know that look so much alike and have similar names that I can't. Seriously, like, you guys have the same name and you're in same kind of band, whatever. Not that I'm talking about this boy band thing, but it was years later I looked at him. He goes, you know, I was one of those. Oh, I think it's Chad from Pop Rocks. That he was like, I was one of the guys in the band that you came out and beat up. Like, Kilo came flying across stage and punched the guy, and he had blood capsule in his mouth, and Flip, you know, Flip comes out and beats up for those who don't know the story, beats up the boy band. Flip can't make it today. They're stuck in traffic kind of thing over the PA.
Was it just a generic boy band, or did they actually say it was, I thought they said Backstreet, and they played a song.
And the guys worked up a dance routine and everything, and then they played the dun, 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 music.
They were white, too, and the flowing. I don't know. I was at that show, but.
And then there was the one time that Space Hog was playing right before us, and people were chanting Flip between their songs.
Yeah.
And we were a huge. Everyone in Flip is a huge Space Hog fan. We've all listened to that record over and over and over again on the road. So we're all side stage just loving these guys, and people are Flip. We weren't being seen either. It wasn't like they could see us and we're chanting. They were just wanted Flip, the next band, to play because no one knew their songs. They only had the one song, and they were waiting to play it for the last, So we're like, fuck. But the two brothers came up after our set and were like, God, you guys are a fucking cool band. It's like, Space Hog said we're cool, man.
They all kind of morph together. Those, and I was going to the Ozfest pretty much every summer on those too. So I always have to like almost do some web research if I want to get specific. But I remember one year Brother Kane Kate played after Green Day, and they were not received quite as well as Green Day. And I remember the singer Damon, is that his name, from Brother Kane, was like, "Hey, come on, you guys clap for fucking Green Day. Fucking clap for us," or something like that. And, like, and Courtney Love one year had a fucking total meltdown.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was fun.
God, one year with Ozfest when all original sat, I don't know how many did they do.
God, it seemed like every other year was Ozzy and then the band. So they at least did three. I know, you know, like where it was like the original lineup.
It was, for me, it was amazing because I was standing with Lori Barbero from Babes in Toyland were pals. And Jimmy Koo de Gras, and Tom Dades, Tommy D. And God, there was one other local rock star guy, but it was like the fucking rock royalty, Minnesota rock royalty. And I'm standing in the middle of the crowd watching the original Black Sabbath playing the songs slower than the records and just fucking like, it doesn't get any better than this. We're all singing the words to every song, just screaming it like, oh, it was so great. Great.
Yeah,
memory.
Those are really, a lot of fun shows too, you know. There's like a little community with that campsite down there too.
Yeah,
and all
yeah Flip did breakfast shows a couple times. Show up in the campgrounds. There's some of that on YouTube. Fun.
Well, what about Bill O'Coin? Do you have a fun Bill O'Coin story to share?
Got a million of them. Seriously, no doubt. My favorite one, though, for sure, and most famous one is, and claim to fame, is the when they finally released the Kiss very first shows at the Coventry.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, or is it the Daisy? Whatever one, the black and white footage. You can see Lita Chris dancing with some other girl.
I think it might be the it doesn't matter.
It's the very first known recording of Kiss.
Yeah.
And Bill had it the whole time we were in the... He was working with us in the band. And he told Brent and I he had an open invitation. He goes, you guys can have first copies if you find a way to get this transferred. Because it was like black and white, one-inch Sony tape, videotape or something. Whatever it was weird and rare. And he said, if you could, you know... And me and Brent kind of dug around a little bit... poking around with a few people we knew to see and to no avail, and then we just kind of forgot about it. But years later, he found someone to transfer it, and he called us, and he's like, I got that video transferred, and I'm going to be showing it to Gene and Paul, and I'm having a meeting with them in a couple weeks to discuss what we want to do with it, because it's my tape, but I want the band to utilize it, and you know, whatever, but I want my cut, and whatever.
Right.
All totally cool. And he said, I had dibs on, well, I could present an art project for it, the marketing for it.
Oh.
So I came up with this whole design called the Kiss Holy Grail. And it was the Holy Grail of all things Kiss. At the time, before everything exploded and they came back all back together and all that shit, right? So I still have all the sketches of how is the point of purchase thing at the music store would be this thing with the velvet, whatever, and the, you know, the whole deal. And him and his boyfriend Roman, who owns an art agency down in Florida, they both loved it and thought it was going to be great. So we have a meeting in New York with Hollywood Records. No, that wasn't Hollywood Records. It was whatever. Yeah, it was Hollywood, the division, whatever. We had a meet. Flip had a meeting with the record label people, and Bill was there with us. And he told me and Brent on the way there that he was going to bring this DVD of this fucking Holy Grail Kiss footage. And I'm like, you're gonna have it on your person? And he said, well, yeah, a copy of it. So Bryn, this is kind of a make or break moment for the band. It was kind of a shit or get off the pot with the record label. It was a big deal. And I couldn't I didn't care. They're not my songs. I'm not going to make any money off them. Whatever, man. Whatever Bryn's going to do, he's going to do. And I'm along for the ride.
Right.
I want to see the fucking Kiss video, man. So we're in this like 14th floor of this building in New York, and fucking... we're in this conference room waiting for those guys to come, the record people to come in, and I see a fucking TV with a DVD VCR thing. And I'm like, Bill, come here. And he comes over, and I go, put it on. He's like, I can't freak you. And I go, come on, dude. We've been waiting for like 10 minutes. They're going to probably be another 20 minutes. I talked him into it. So he pops it in, and those guys come over, and they look at it, and they're like, you know, I give it up to them. You know, they're worried about what the fucking future of the band is going to be. And I'm just like, it's going to be what it's going to be. We're watching this Kiss video before Gene and Paul are seeing it, dude. No human being has seen this except for us and Bill O'Coin and the guy who transferred it. And we're watching it. And it just was amazing. So I had my little flip phone. And I recorded like 30 seconds of it. You know, with a little shitty flip phone on a little black and white TV in a conference room, just to have it, like, I don't know, in 40 years from now, if, you know, if any of my kids ever show up and claim to be mine, they can say, my dad was the first person to ever see. But in hindsight, that thing got released with no fanfare whatsoever. It was put on the box set at the end. And
And wasn't it actually like an Easter egg too? I'm not sure about that.
It might have even been an Easter egg. Dude, what a fucking letdown.
Yeah.
The first footage of Kiss ever. It's the whole show, too. Like, hear him tuning between songs, and the camera just ran the whole... I thought it was amazing. Me and my Kiss friends were, like, freaking out about it, man.
That's the kind of stuff that I want. You know what I mean? I want to see more of that kind of behind the scenes or that obscure.
They did show a lot in that new show on
A&E. I was surprised at how much new, like, unseen footage, at least for me, you know, I mean.
And they milked it because they'd keep showing it over and over, but it makes you wonder, they're probably sitting on a shitload of it that they're just going to keep releasing as they need more houses or what, I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea what the holdup is. I just... They have a different mindset about the whole thing, you know. Every one of them, you know. I mean, I know Ace and Peter don't have any say anymore, but I mean, Ace doesn't give a shit about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just it was what he did, and you know, to him, it's like it was almost like if he had a job at Arby's. It's like, oh, you found my old Arby's hat. You know, it's like, you know, that's kind of what it's like. Oh, no, Ace, this is not an Arby's hat. This is your fucking platinum award for your solo album on the floor behind the couch.
I know, man. Did you ever go down the Bill Baker rabbit hole?
Mm-mm. Who's Bill Baker?
He's a dude who was really tight with Ace for a while, and he had an Ace Frehley tribute band. He was doing an Ace Frehley, was it Comets? Frehley's Comet tribute band.
Okay. Just to that era of Ace?
Yes.
Check.
On Step Brothers when What's-His-Face is doing the 80s Billy Joel tribute.
Yeah.
Piano Man, woo! Sir, it's an 80s Billy Joel tribute band. And I know that when times get tough, you got to remember to keeping the faith.
I would prefer those kind of tributes, honestly, than the ones that are out there. Yeah, let's shift gears a little bit to Hairball. I'm going to shoot... This is a very broad-based question. Like, I'm not asking you to open up your bank account or anything like that, but just as a question of, like, curiosity, did you make more money with Hairball, I assume, than you did with Flip?
Yeah.
We don't have to talk numbers here. I mean, I'm going somewhere with this, by the way. It's not to make Flip look bad or anything like that.
We did make a chunk of money when we signed a record deal with Hollywood that we split five ways. We gave Bill a coin... I think an equal cut because he never really Bryn met him when he lived in New York and they were friends. They were buds. They worked on a couple projects together, whatever, but nothing contractual or I don't think money was ever exchanged. It was just, he really liked the band and believed in the band and just wanted to help us out. You know, when we signed with Arts Label, he was kind of the mouthpiece for it. And he kind of, you know, just, was with us at all these big shows.
And that's R. Alexakis of Everclear.
Yeah.
For the listener.
Yeah, he found a Flip song and fell in love with the band, and he had a spin-off label of Hollywood, I think. It was called Artemis Records. I think it was off Hollywood or off, I don't know, Warner or something like that. But he signed two bands, us and someone else, and... sorry, I'm not trying to jump off track here, but keep going down there. What was the question? Go back, rewind a little.
The
money.
Making more money.
Okay,
with Hairball,
so we split the money with Bill because he never really, you know, it was like, here, man, you're part of the band as much as anyone. You've done so much for us. Here's a chunk. That was the only time we ever made any money. Otherwise, we always put the money just back into the show. Yeah, none of the gigs we really did were money gigs. They were exposure gigs and playing on, you know, in front of the fucking post office on tax day and on the roof of the fucking hair salon in uptown. And
Bill talked to cops. There at that one.
I won't give you a ticket if I get to meet your manager. But and Hairball was a money making machine.
Yeah.
So,
well, I just saw them in Duluth and there had to be about 10,000 people there.
There was eight. That's been a gig that's just been insane.
Right, every year, like I've seen the pictures. This is
they've been doing it since before I was even in the band, and it was on a small scale. And it just it just kept growing. I think the last time I played there was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and there were 7,000 people. So, and
just
it's
a gorgeous setup too.
Oh my God. It was literally one of my favorite places. I'm sorry I'm saying literally too much, but seriously, one of my favorite places to play because, you know, all the boats, you could see them when the sun went down behind you and all that shit. That was great.
Well, here's where I was going with that. Was that kind of like almost deflating in a certain sense? Because you're an artist, you created, you've done this stuff with Flip, you did Useless, other bands where you're kind of doing your own kind of, you're putting something fresh into the world. I had a guaranteed financially different situation, but I never made a penny. Like literally, like it was all loss. You won't be surprised by that. But until we did covers and we started doing cover shows. Again, I've never had the hairball kind of level, but I've made $1,000 in a night, and it just, like, after a while, it got kind of soul-sucking, to be honest with you. It's like, I don't like a lot of these songs, and it just...
There isn't...
Is there that aspect, or I think it would be a lot easier in hairball, standing on that stage and seeing that. That right. probably helps it through a little bit, but...
Yeah, and we built that thing.
Right, yeah, well, know? The history of hairball is... And that's not a cheap shot at
football. Not at all. I think everyone understands exactly what your question is.
Hairball is amazing.
Yeah. And it wasn't. You know, it started off as a goof, admittedly.
It started right around the time I moved to the Twin Cities, about 20 years ago at least.
Yeah, yeah. It's the 20... Where?
Chainsaw used to sing, years. Right?
Like, yeah. It was his band. He created it. And it was... That was the promo, the tagline for the promo, a spoof on the 80s.
Yeah.
So it was a literal joke. He was changing the words and changing the outfits to be funny and silly, and it was a joke. And then slowly, it just different members came in, and certain things happened, and just started getting a little bit more serious and a little bit more attention, and it had growing pains, and it's still having crazy growing pains. It's 21 years old, and it's like when something moves that fast... I told Happy a long time ago, I'm like, dude, there's no controlling this. It's a boulder rolling down a hill, and we're lucky if we can try to nudge it every once in a while in the right direction. And it was, you know, DIY from the get-go. I was working, doing the band's website. I redid the logo. I did all their posters, merch, everything for 2-3 years before I even joined the band.
Or the same way you got into Flip, kind of.
Yeah. 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 Now, and I wasn't there. Like, I even told Bryn, I go, I know every song in Flip's catalog on guitar, bass, and drums. I almost did a drum show with Flip when Kilo's second baby was going to be born.
Oh, wow. That would have been kind of fun.
He was, dude, I was scared shitless, but I was ready. I rehearsed my fucking ass off. And it was only a 30, 45 minute set or whatever, but I can't remember what the deal was. His son was born before the gig or... Like he knew he wasn't, whatever happened, he was able to do the show. And I was kind of relieved.
All right.
Because on guitar, I would have been okay. And bass, I would have been probably all right. But I remember even when I joined, I was playing bass and I hadn't
before.
Before
you joined, you almost did a drum show. I got you.
Yeah. I was still a tech guy at the time.
Right on. So, hey, what was the catalyst for you deciding to call it a day with Hairball then? Was it just not fun anymore? Or
no, it's always fun. It just... I just knew that it was never going to end if I didn't end it. You know, the money was incredible and it was deservedly incredible. You know, we all work really hard and I especially, you know, was not especially like more than anybody else in that sense. Just I'm constantly working on graphic design and videos. Okay. I did all the videos, the content behind the band the whole night. I did all that content.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and Happy's the guy who designed all the stage shit, and you know, and we were the same way in the Dead Cowboys, you know, building wooden fences and fucking building horse troughs that have dry ice come out of them and shooting blanks on stage with real guns.
I always thought that kind of stuff was fun to get into and do.
We just can't help it. It's like, it's always been a priority to me at every riffraff.
Anybody in the band, an electrician?
Oh my God. Yeah. Or you just figured, we just figured it out. You had to tap the 220 no matter where you played back in the day. So you just kind of did rock, paper, scissors and whoever lost had to do it.
We made this giant, like, light. I'll just show you so you can see the logo. So this is the logo for Jesus Chrysler. Right. So we made a giant light, you know, very much inspired by Flip. And we just piece of plywood, cut holes in it, mounted, went to Axeman, bought all the light bulb things.
Yeah.
And we just put regular light bulbs in it.
Yeah.
And the thing weighed like just ridiculous.
Totally, man.
And we took it, we played it at we did a show at the Jungle right after the show with you guys. We had another gig there of our own. About 2 weeks later, and that was the first time. That was the big debut of the thing.
Unveil.
We turned the thing on, and it ended up, it ran for about 5-6 minutes. Then everything in the bar goes dark.
No.
We shut the thing. It was like, we don't know what the fuck we're doing and we go over to see what's going on, and the electric cord is like a piece of spaghetti noodle.
Yeah, just hot as fuck. That's scary, ain't it?
We never used it again.
Feel like it's gonna melt in your
hand. Well, that was a lot of work.
Did you ever see Flip when I did the solo and had the blinking mm-hmm. bass lights going back and forth? Those were those yard lights, those rectangular yard lights that you'd put two in your yard.
Sure.
So I had four in each cabinet, and I was rigging up a foot switch so I could do my talk box solo and then play my bass and run the lights with my feet. And I went to the electronics store in Minneapolis, right by Brandon Kilo's place, and I told the guy what I wanted to do, and he said, "Dude, you're gonna blow yourself to pieces. You can't run that kind of power from a wall outlet into a metal foot switch and into the light." And I'm like, "Well, I don't know. So he grabbed a piece of scratch paper and drew the schematics. I still have it. Here's what you need to do. I'll sell you these two relays, and then those go to this, and then these go to these switchers, and then they go to this, and then it goes in your thing, and you have to ground it here, blah, blah, blah." And he drew it all out and sold me all the parts. And it took me a good 2 weeks of working till 4 in the morning up there by myself trying to get it to work. And I finally did. I was like, "Eureka, it works." I'm fucking hitting both switch with my big stomping platform boots on. Switch, switch, switch. That lasted on the road about 2 months. And then Kilo wound up doing it sitting behind his kit with a power strip. Two power strips.
Okay.
Hitting on and off.
Oh, just a little thump. That low tech. That's more my speed. That guy slides that schematic at me. I'm like, "Can you just do it?"
I was like, "This is going to be the greatest thing ever." And it was. But it was like,
no, it was cool.
It turned into more because then it was still had the cords, and then the cords got, they were, five conductor, and they'd break. And it's like, what if you just plug them into extension cords and give them to Kilo to sit down and flip them back and forth?
Our first light board was like light switches.
Totally.
Like, and you flip them up and down.
Yep.
And each one was connected to an outlet right there. And it was just
same thing. Floodlights, colored floodlights.
Yeah.
We made a snake out in front of the yard, 50-foot extension cords from Menards and just taped them together.
A lot of those yard parties, like in farms, were some of the funnest ones that, I don't know if you, I have to assume, because Flip was always doing like, I remember like, you guys would do like garage gigs like last minute and...
And we did three in one day one time.
Yeah.
One was in St. Cloud, one in Minneapolis, one somewhere else. So we had a crew bouncing. They took the set from the first set and went to the third set and already had a second set. So we had two crews.
Well,
and
they're
two
still kind of doing stuff like that.
Yeah, they just did like nine
thing.
Pubs in three days or something.
Exactly that. And then they did record store day where they hit like six stores. We went and saw one of those. But was there any talk? Was any talk of you going back to Flip at all when they decided to put that back together?
Well, it was kind of a long. I mean, when was the first thing at First
Last
Avenue?
Last few years, yeah, like five, maybe 2015, 14.
Yeah.
Izzy Presley probably knows.
Yeah, and I went to I think it was the next weekend at the Carpet. It wasn't the next night.
I thought it
night.
Was vice versa, and I thought it was back-to-back nights, but...
No, I know because I know the Carpet was the second night.
Okay.
Because I wanted to go to the first night, but Hairball played. And we played the second night, too, but I got off early. I can't remember. But my girlfriend at the time was like, "You're really going to regret not..." Because it was just one of those nights, like, I'm not going to go down there. But then I was like, "Yeah, I do." And they got me up and did, three songs or something at the end of the night. It was super cool seeing them all. And Chia was at that one.
Yeah. Yeah, he did, I think he did two.
Yeah.
He might have done both of those two shows.
Yeah, so I was doing the Hairball thing full on, so no, Bryn didn't even ask.
Okay. Oh, so I guess, I'm thinking about that. You just actually fairly in the last couple of years just quit Hairball. So yeah,
And he had already been doing it.
It just came in while we were talking. As you can see, I didn't even use my notes here. I turned out I didn't even at all.
I have a lot of fucking and a lot of rabbit holes, especially with kindred spirits that we like the same rock and roll.
Right on, man.
Like, you know.
You know, hey, with something about Happy, circling back to kind of what we talked about at the beginning of the show about, you know, a guitar player with talent not being able to do some of that easy stuff. He's the kind of, like, he fits so many holes and, like, I don't know about you, but and you probably could tell by our earlier conversation, I get really irritated when I see a cover band that just the guitar player is clearly mailing it in. Sometimes they don't even learn it right. They don't have the right notes.
Dude, imagine being Hairball, where you sit in the truck and listen to every... you can't not listen in the opening bands because you're getting ready for a show. It takes that long. And there's just so many of them that just don't give a shit. The signature thing, like...
I don't even know what it is, though. Like, why are you even here? Like,
that's like Stranglehold, you know? When that drum part comes in there... If you're a drummer, wouldn't you spend all damn week learning that? Because it's fucking fun to play and you air drummed it your whole life? Nope. I just know it does something like that, so I just do something like that. And it's not... It would drive us fucking crazy. It's like, you got to know when you have to play something to note for note.
Yeah.
And when you can let it breathe and do
perfectly
your own thing.
Said, yeah, because I'm not talking about guys that are adding their own flavor or a band trying to do a unique spin.
Exactly. You don't have to. Neither me or Jason are saying you have to play shit note for note. But there's things as a musician you'd think you'd want to because that's the hook or that's the
vibe of the song.
That's the vibe Everything of the song. Yeah, man.
Anyway, Happy is one of the. There's no. It's no wonder why he's in that band. I mean, like. He's one of those guys that does it. He'll go from Kiss to Eddie Van Halen, and he'll capture the vibe of each band properly and do it justice.
Yeah, when he goes and does a Poison solo or Twisted Sister, he goes ape shit and just plays as fast as he can or as weird as he can because he's having fun playing guitar and flopping around like a dead fish. You know, but when he's playing Queen and Aerosmith songs, he's nailing it.
This has been a lot of fun, but we are kind of getting close to, I don't know, there's not a real time limit on this, but I know I got a couple things prepared to do with you here. Is there anything we want to promote? I'm just happy as hell you agreed to do this, man. This is fun.
The only thing it's a great segue to promote is Happy's Benefit, August 22nd Rockwoods in Otsego. We just launched the website this week. It's teamhappybenefit.com. Super easy, teamhappybenefit.com. All of us friends of his knew there was going to be a benefit at some point. Mm-hmm. It was just like, there's no way that someone can go incur as much physical damage as he has. I mean, to button his story up real quick, he went in for hip surgery because he just blew his hip out after being a freak for so many years. And while he was there, he said, check my throat and stuff because I seem to have, you know, acid reflux more often than I should. And the doctor said it was fine and don't worry about it. We'll check after the surgery. And he had a friend that's a girl, a couple of them actually, insist, go back and tell the doctor to fucking test. Give you what you need to test that, and that's when they found stage 3 esophageal cancer.
Okay.
So he did the hip surgery, and then they had to cut part of his stomach out, part of his esophagus out, sew him back together, and the, you know, chemo, endless chemo and radiation and all that shit, and he was in remission for 2 years, and then they found 2 more lumps. And since then, he had a different kind of chemo. Well, the doctor said they can't operate anymore, so it was like they're thinking you have 1 to 2 years.
Right.
And then this new chemo that he's on is really doing well. It's shrinking the tumors.
That is excellent. I mean, I didn't really want to get into it. I wasn't sure what the prognosis is. You know, I do want to know how... I'm glad you
Yeah, I don't want to bum anybody. No, he's the first one to not want to talk about it on stage or anything and bum people out. But he's totally...
He's been very candid on Facebook, though.
Yes, yes. He was live when you walked in the door.
Oh.
I was watching him do his live thing. He was just wrapping it up, just updating people on what's going on. But yeah, the chemo is kicking his ass once every 3 weeks, and it kicks his ass for a day or two, but he's fucking out on the road. They're playing. They're doing all their scheduled shows, and he's doing great. And the benefit is just, you know, the hope and the optimism is there, but just in case his wife and kids don't have, he's got an adopted son who's like 18, I think now or something. And then his biological son, Hunter, who's 3 or 4 or something.
Yeah, he came on stage at the end of the show. That was cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's,
normally kids irritate the shit out of me, Randy, but I got to tell you, that was kind of nice.
Yeah, he has a good way of making it kind of cool when he brings a kid up.
No,
like if they suck, he's not afraid to kick them off. But yeah, so there's going to be quite a few really cool surprise guests at this show, actually. And there's already the Fabulous Armadillos are playing, Rising Force, new metal band in town. Pork Chop, a lot of people know Pork Chop, Hairball's bus driver who has his own band. He's a blues guitar player. He's playing. Faith and I are doing a set. Brian, the new bass player in Hairball, him and his girlfriend are doing it. There's like an acoustic stage and a main stage, and so there's nonstop music.
There'll and be you said like, Otsego, what's the venue, dude?
Rockwoods.
Okay.
It's just right off 94 and
right on.
Otsego there by Albertville or whatever. No, not Albertville. Rogers. That. But teamhappybenefit.com, yeah, check it out. You can donate there even if you're not going. You can buy t-shirts and whatever. But it's going to be a rip-roaring Sunday. It goes from 2 to 10, which I kind of like. I hate when things are open-ended sometimes. You know, like, if you know it's going to be 2 to 10, you know, you can know that you're going to be heading out at 10 o'clock if you want, which is nice.
Yeah, we didn't know that when we saw Hairball on Duluth that it said, I was like, I've never been to this thing before. I can't find any information that says anything but Hairball's playing. It's a kind of a community thing tied in with the 4th.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those things are a little more like, yeah, they're going to start at 6. So there's a chance of, let's just get there, you know, whatever. And I'm like, if you were there, you know who I'm talking about. But the first opening band was just, it was such a buzzkill because it's like you kept thinking, well, maybe they'll wrap it up quick. It'll only be like a half hour, you know. And it was just like two opening cover bands. One, the second one was much better. Not my cup of tea, music wise. It was a lot
the
of like
70s kinda, Sunshine.
Yeah,
band.
70s Sunshine band. But
that's
they
the
were,
band Brian was in before he joined Hairball.
They were very good. They sound like a band that's actually played together. The other one,
yeah, they're all old school players. Yeah. Lance from Gemini singing.
Well, definitely for people that don't know the situation about Happy, check out the website. You know, there's other ways to contribute, I'm sure, through the website, you know, if you can't make it to the show. So,
yep.
Now in a really hard shift, we're going to go to something completely ridiculous here. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this game every episode of this. So, you know, we never even got into this a little bit. This is a sidecast I'm doing for the summer. I call it Suns Out, Mics Out. And it's basically just to kind of be loose and kind of celebrate that, you know, how in Minnesota we have summer, we almost have to embrace it a little harder because, you know, we know it's going to end a little quicker, that kind of deal.
Yep.
So it's just enjoying all those things, everything from, you know, I don't know, whether it's grilling and listening to music, having some beers with some friends, going to concerts outside. I mean,
totally.
They're all kind of my favorite things. So that's what you're part of. So thank you for being this. I don't know if I'll do it again next summer. Yes, this was an experiment, so we'll see how I feel next year.
Have you been hearing like birds and stuff in the background?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. That's my favorite part is that, you know, especially because people listen to podcasts a lot with earbuds and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's stereo too, so you can kind of hear it.
There's, awesome. Very awesome.
One guy's backyard, the helicopter was over from the news.
Must have been in Minneapolis. No,
yeah, it was. And you know what it was? It was the night that, not to be too tragic here, where that most recent shooting in Uptown where we had no idea what was going on. We just, the newscopter was there, but that was the day where the federal marshal shot some guy in a parking ramp. So
yeah. Who are you interviewing there?
That was a guy named Bud Berge. He's now he did like the Jesus Christ or music videos, like you know. So in my little world, he's a guy that connected to in the past. So
cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, the game we're gonna do now, it's called Who Said It, Ted Nugent or. I'm going to give you a quote. I'm going to give you a choice between Ted Nugent or somebody else, and you have to determine how many people got this right. Now, are you familiar with the comedian Don Jameson from That Metal Show?
Yes.
He has the record on this so far. He has 8 out of 10.
And it's the same question to every guy?
I start with fresh, because I want to make it for the listener. I do new quotes each time. you know, so the people listening at home can go, ooh, I wonder which one it is too. See, I'm trying to make it entertaining for everybody.
Yeah, well, then everybody could listen to the previous week and get all the questions.
Well, there's that too. But I have to admit, I don't think that was a huge concern. But, yeah, so anyway, but everybody else, 4, 5, and 6. That's the scores are right in that 5 zone. So let's see how you do today, Randy.
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. 6. Yeah.
All right. And, since you haven't listened to the show, I'm going to tell you flat out, but it'll be really obvious. There's one softball in there for you. Okay.
So you don't get goose egg?
Yeah, you will. I had one guy get the softball wrong, but he's just a buddy of mine who was playing along.
Some shit.
Yeah, episode 1 for people who want to go back to that, Andy Schell. Anyway, all right, so your first quote here, Randy, who said the following, Ted Nugent or Jill Duggar, who is the patriarch of the TLC show 19 Kids and Counting? She's the mom of that family. So if you've heard of the show, I think the title gives it away if you don't know anything about it. She has 19 kids. Okay, so here's the quote. Was this Ted Nugent or Jill Duggar? God gave us the gift of life, the most precious gift ever. Was that Ted Nugent or Jill Duggar, who has 19 children?
I'm going to have to say Ted.
Yeah? Oh, you got it right. Right out of the gate, you got one. No deliberation. Other than like Ted.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, let's get to it. The next one then. Who said the following? Ted Nugent or Mike Tyson? Ted Nugent or Mike Tyson? My love is like a tire iron.
Ted.
Man, you're just killing it. That's 2 for 2. Maybe I should have made these a little harder.
No, I'm doing them by deduction, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially that one, because Mike Tyson can't say that.
Well, he might have said
he got accused of rape.
He could have, yeah.
Oh yeah, before he got.
These are from all periods of time. So.
And plus, I can lie because I'd say Ted told me that. You just didn't hear him.
Yeah. Well, Don tried to pull that with one of the ones he got wrong. He wants to go with 9. He's like, there's no way Ted never said that. So.
That's kind of what I thought of number 1.
Too. Okay. All right. So the next one up then is like, who said the following? Ted Nugent or Bill Gates? If you can't make it good, at least make it look good. Was that Ted Nugent or Bill Gates?
Ted.
No, it's your first one wrong. That was
really
Bill. That's not the score.
Damn, I didn't think he'd be that loosey-goosey.
That's why I picked that one. I was like, well, that does
nice.
Not sound
very
like
good.
All right, who said the following? Ted Nugent or former vice or first lady Michelle Obama? You have to practice. This one's a little wordy, so I got to set myself up here.
Okay.
You have to practice success. Success doesn't just show up. If you aren't practicing success today, you won't wake up in 20 years and be successful. Was that Ted or Michelle Obama?
Ted.
That is Michelle Obama.
Fuck.
All right, well, now you're getting
both
cold.
Are preachy.
Yeah.
Not that that's preachy.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's true.
All right, next up we got Ted Nugent or Dennis Rodman.
Hey, that's bullshit. There's a lot of fucking successful people that haven't done shit.
Okay. You know what? You're goddamn right.
You can wake up and be successful. I think more people wake up successful than people that work at it.
Yeah.
More people born into it. More people that fucking get hit by a car and fucking turn into a billion. You know what I mean? Anyway, go ahead.
That's something to ponder.
Yeah.
That's some food for thought. That's for the listeners. All right, who said this? Ted Nugent or Dennis Rodman?
The answer is yes.
They say Elvis is dead. I say no. You're looking at him. Was that Ted Nugent or Dennis Rodman?
Dennis.
Right on.
That's got to be
now
over
you're
the
back,
top.
Baby.
Dennis.
All right, so you got 3 out of 5 so far. 5 left here. So you can still tie it on. If there's, the following, was this Ted Nugent or Arnold Schwarzenegger? If there's one thing I am, it's always right. Was that Ted Nugent or Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Ted.
Got that one too. All right. There's 4 for you. The next one then, who said the following, Ted Nugent or Al Sharpton? Ted Nugent or Al Sharpton? Fuzzy-headed idiots hate me. Ted Nugent or Al Sharpton?
Wasn't that recent? I swear to God, Ted got in trouble for saying that recently. I'm going to say Ted.
Another one right?
Yeah, I swear to God, he said, think I remember him walk hit backwards his way out of it.
I don't know when this quote was said. This, I know he's had a lot of COVID stuff that's come out that's been a lot of fun, but... All right, who said the following? Was this Ted Nugent or Kermit the Frog? I was wrong when I said I never promised anyone. I promised me. Was that Ted Nugent or Kermit the Frog?
Ted.
That was Kermit the Frog.
Oh,
all right.
Wow.
Now, Randy, you got five. You still got a chance to get two more to get a solid second place here. So, all right. The following then, who said this? Was it Ted Nugent or filmmaker Spike Lee? Ted Nugent or Spike Lee? I may have been born yesterday, but I stayed up all night.
That's good. I hope it's Ted. I'm going to say it's Ted.
That is Spike Lee.
Damn it, Ted. You fucking idiot. You should have said that.
All right. Your last one here is then, who said the following? Was this Ted Nugent or Justin Timberlake? Ted Nugent or Justin Timberlake? My baby, she'll take a chance. My baby got a brand new dance. Wango tango, wango tango.
That put me at the six that I would guess I would get. Right?
Yeah.
Did I get a six?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Well, do you want to make it official? Who said it?
Ted.
Okay, there we go. All right.
That last birdie, that last gimme putt.
I would like to throw one in there. It's just kind of ridiculous.
That's good. Who was it, though? Who was the other one? The last one?
Oh, Justin Timberlake.
Justin.
He was like, my baby.
That's good.
You want to try playing a song?
Yeah, let's do it. You going to show me how?
Yeah.
Or just tell me the chords?
All right.
One, two, three, four. And you know it don't come easy. And this love of mine keeps growing all the time. And you know it don't come easy. Please remember, please, I'll make it. Here within your reach, if you're big enough to take it.
But it'll always be freaky to me.
Yeah, man.
Sun's out, Mike's out. Thanks a lot, Randy. Faith, thank you for coming out and joining us on this.
Thanks for having us, man. Super cool, super fun.
I'm gonna do like a slaughter ending.
Spike the pick. Right on, man. Good.
All
times.
Right, that was a blast. And by the way, that was the best take.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
22 by 28. Square box with windows.
And there's windows every square inch of it. So we got the door open, windows open. It's you know, it's a beautiful
looking
summer
over
evening.
The lake.
Yeah.
Can you see the lake or is the shit in the way?
Oh, you can see the lake, man.
I'm surprised we haven't.
You're
heard
doing all right,
peppers.
Randy.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.